thanks for tuning in to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is presented by preaching minister Josh Yeager. Let's tune in now for Josh's message.
Good morning, 10th and Broad. It's good to see everybody this morning. If you notice, we're doing things a little bit differently this morning. I'm getting up very early. According to our, we don't do, I don't think you do anything regular on when it comes to order of worship, which I'm thankful for, because then you have the ability to change it up a little bit. But this morning, we're starting a new series, a four-part series called Worship, and I asked the song leaders, the worship leaders, if they could get me up early on so that I can kind of lead us into a time of worship. Because after the sermon this morning, we're going to sing the bulk of our songs and have a time of worship. And hopefully we can allow the message this morning to lead us into a time of worship and a time of meaningful praise to God. So, like I said, worship. It's kind of one of those hot topics in our it's actually not just our fellowship. It's, you know, lots of churches are talking about worship. And it's a very broad topic. As I started reading and studying, you know, there's no possible way I can cover everything there is to say about worship in four sermons. There's just no way, unless we started Sunday morning and ended like Monday morning, you know, every week. I mean, there's just so much to say about worship. There's no way I can cover everything. But what I'm hoping to say is something that will be meaningful to us and to the place where we are in our ideas of worship. And you know, in my generation, for my generation and younger, maybe even some generations older than me, worship is incredibly important. It's an important thing for everybody, but especially my generation will come to a church sometimes and we'll experience the worship and we won't like it and then we'll move away and we'll try a different church simply because of the worship service. We don't get to know the people, we don't get to get into the activities, we walk into the worship service and if we don't like it, we move on. I'm not saying that's the right attitude, that's just the reality. And so, the reality is that worship is incredibly important, and my hope with this series is to just kind of refocus on the purpose and what worship is, to reconnect to God in the midst of our worship, and also to just reignite a passion and a desire to worship God. Because I think sometimes we just get into this thing where we just keep going and we do it, and it just becomes, you know, what we do. And we forget to connect it with who God is and what He's done, and worship just kind of turns into this habitual practice that we're just doing, you know, and we're not really thinking about it. And so I hope that this series can accomplish that. And so today we're actually going to work on just defining worship. You know, we can't talk about worship if we don't define it, if we don't tell what it is that we're talking about. And so today I'm going to really try to focus in on a definition of worship. Now, I have to tell you that, you know, with the way that my mind works, I may define worship for you today, and 6 months down the road, I may have a totally different definition. That's just the way I am. And maybe that's the way you are too, you know, and hopefully we are that way. Hopefully we're growing and we're moving in a direction, and we don't ever stay static or stay the same. So, you know, my definition of worship today may be different 6 months or a year, or hopefully it is different from that far in the future. And then next week, I want to introduce you to the God of the universe. That's my intention. I want to introduce you to the God of the universe because He is the only one that makes worship possible. You know, the object of worship is what makes worship. You know, if you worship something that is not worth worshiping, then that worship is going to be cold. Or if you don't realize what it is that you are worshiping or who it is that you are worshiping, it makes that worship become just a do-over thing that you just keep doing over and over again, and you don't really realize it or let it affect you in the way that it was planned to affect you. And then the third week, I want to look at the longing that we have as human beings. You see, we have this longing. We have this desire. We know, human beings, we know that there is something which transcends us that has to be more important than us. Because just this, just the horizontal, just the things that we see around us, it's so messed up. We know that there's got to be something beyond us. And I want to speak to that idea, that desire in every single human being. And then the fourth week, the week right before Christmas, I just want to allow one of the most momentous occasions of worship to just speak to us. You know, the time when Jesus arrived on the earth, and I know that it probably wasn't December 25th, but we're gonna go with the season of the year, and we're gonna just allow that story to speak into our mentality and our ideas of worship. And so that's the next 4 weeks. And so I hope that you will join along, and I hope that it will be something that will be meaningful and hopefully lead you into another step, another, you know, place of worship in your life. So, you know, worship. I mean, when we think of worship, one of the first things that comes to mind is the worship wars. You know what I'm talking about. People struggle with worship. They fight about whether you should use instruments, or they fight about whether you should use praise teams, or whether you should use microphones, or whether you should, you know, have hand raising or kneeling in the midst of worship. You know, there's always these fights and these struggles about worship. You know, there's these fights about whether our worship should be seeker sensitive. You know, that's kind of that was a buzzword for a little while. We need to make our assemblies seeker sensitive. And some people are like, no, our worship services are supposed to be for the church people. They're supposed to be for those who believe in God. And so there's fight over, you know, well, which way do we go? Well, you know, an interesting fact about that, Fannie J. Crosby and William Booth, they're kind of scary looking, I know. But these are actually two of the great hymn writers some of the great hymn writers that we have in our books. I mean, they're older hymns, but we sing them all the time. You can just go and look in the back of your songbook. There's an index for authors. Look these two up. You'll see that a ton of the songs that we sing, the hymns that we sing, are attributed to them. They wrote the words. But what they did is they actually took their poems and they set their poems to secular music. You know, so there was like an old bar tune that they would sing in the bars, and they would put their poem to that music so that people, when people came in off the street, they would recognize the tune and be able to pick it up, or they would, you know, use things that were maybe being played in the symphony, and they would write and they would put their words. So they were actually very seeker sensitive. You know, so a lot of those tunes that we are so used to being played in church were actually in bars and symphony halls. You know, they were part of secular society. Just imagine if we did that to some of our rock and roll songs. I don't know if it would work. But so that was a big issue. You know, I've heard statements where people say, man, that worship was exciting. You know, I like the upbeat songs, and I like the way it made me feel, and you know, the peppiness, and oh man, that worship service was boring. I mean, I just wanted to curl up and die. It was so boring. I mean, I've heard people talk like that. I really have. I've heard people say, well, I enjoyed that service, but I didn't enjoy that one. You know, that church has great worship. That church does not have great worship. And like I said, a lot of times people will choose churches based on the worship that they experience in that place. And here's the thing I want to confess to you is that I've used statements like that. I've talked about worship like that. And I am going to make maybe it's a bad assumption, but I'm going to assume that you probably have too. That at times in your life, you've just said, man, that was a great worship service. Man, that one really stunk, you know. And I see Charlie kind of smiling back there because, you know, those of us who have ever led worship, we've had those moments where we're like, man, that was terrible. What did I just do, you know? Or those of us who have gotten up to speak, we're like, man, that was terrible. Why did I say it like that, you know? But we all have those moments where it just seemed like the worship didn't meet what we hoped it would meet, and it didn't do what we wanted it to do. But I think that there's a problem when we think about worship this way. And so I want to go back to the way that the early people in the Bible looked at worship. And some people in Cordell would call these sermons that I'm about to preach to you this morning a nerd sermon, okay? Because I'm going back to the actual words, and I'm kind of talking about what those words mean, looking at the Hebrew and Greek. And they called these sermons nerd sermons. And these are the hardest sermons to keep people engaged. And so I'm going to work really hard to keep you engaged and focusing and tracking with me, because I think this is really important. And we're going to get down to some really important conclusions at the end. And I don't want you to miss the journey there. So the first words we're going to look at, of course, are the Hebrew words. Okay, Hebrew words, that's the The original language of our Old Testaments. They're written in Hebrew. Now, there's a section of Daniel that's written in Aramaic, but we're not going to talk about that, okay? But most of the Old Testament is written in Hebrew. And so I just want to look at some of these, a couple of these Hebrew words for worship. Okay, the first place that we're going to go is Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 19. Now, I have to tell you that I am no Hebrew scholar, okay? I did not even take Hebrew in school. I'm kind of ashamed at that. I should have taken it. It was available, but I didn't have to take it to graduate, so I didn't take it, okay? So I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I'm not even going to attempt to show you what these words look like or pronounce these words because I would botch it all up. You'd probably have no idea. So I could, you know, have fun with you, but if a real Hebrew scholar got a hold of this video and was like, oh man, he didn't even know what he's talking about. So I'm not going to go there. I do have some tools where I can see the words and I can see their definitions and I can kind of do the work, but I'm not going to go at trying to say them or show them to you. But the first place we're going to go is Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 19. And just a little bit of background on the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is actually called Deuteronomy because it's a restatement of the law, okay? It's restating Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus in some ways, you know, especially Exodus and Leviticus. So if you think that the Old Testament is just kind of, it just kind of keeps saying the same thing over and over again, you're right, it does. Deuteronomy is just a repeat of what's been already been said. It's just kind of Moses is, he preaches three sermons to the people of Israel before they go off into the promised land because Moses is staying. He's going to die in the desert with that generation that was supposed to die off because he sinned. So Moses preaches these three sermons. That's what Deuteronomy is. It's a restatement of the law before they go into the promised land. And this particular passage that we're going to look at in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 19, it's a restatement of one of the big 10, okay? The big 10 commandments. And it's the restatement of the 10 commandments that says, don't worship idols, okay? So Moses is speaking here. He's preaching to the people. And he says this. He says, and when you look up to the sky and you see the sun and the moon and the stars and all the heavenly array, do not be enticed bowing down to them and worshiping things the Lord your God has apportioned to all the nations under the heaven. You see, God's saying don't, or Moses is saying don't bow down to these things that I've given to everybody. Everybody can see the stars. Everybody can see the sun. Don't bow down to them. And there's two words here that are used for bowing down, for worshiping it. And I want you to see something about this, okay? The TNIV, what I'm using, it says bowing down and worshiping things. But here's what the NASB says. It says, drawn away and worship them and serve them. And the NRSV says, do not be led astray and bow down to them and serve them. So you can see that these words are just kind of used interchangeably. So all the way through the Old Testament, these words are used interchangeably. And there's actually more words than what I'm showing you on the screen. But these are the main two that are translated to worship. Okay, so the first one means this, to bow down. It basically means just to bow down. You know, bow down, declare allegiance, to be subject to a king. Okay, so if you are, you know, declaring allegiance, or if you're paying homage to a king, or if you're declaring that you are a subject of a king, you know that that king holds your life in his hands. You know, he is your ruler. He is the one who tells you everything that you are supposed to do. And if he tells you to give him all of your possessions, you have to do it because he's the king and he has the power and you do not. So that is a word that is used for worship. The second one is basically to serve. And that just means that you expend energy intensely. You work hard for your master. You know, you expend energy. You are working every moment, every day is for your master. This is the same word that was used for a slave to his master, okay? And so that's the idea. And in the ancient world, here's the reality, and I talked a little bit about this, last week. In the ancient world, there were no weather forecasters. You didn't know when the next storm was going to hit. You didn't know when the tornado was possible. You didn't know when the sickness was going to hit. Most families lost as many children as they kept. Okay, that was just the reality because there was no modern medicine. You know, there was no electricity. There was no hospitals. Death was a huge part of life. You know, sometimes we get so upset when we lose one person that's close to us. These people were constantly losing people that were close to them. It was just the reality of their lives. And so they were looking to submit and to bow down and to serve a deity so that he could take care of them, so that he could do what only he could do. And so that was their mentality. That was their idea. And today we kind of have this illusion of control. We have this idea that we can control all these things. You know, we have hospitals, we have 401ks and retirements, and, you know, we have all this stuff, and we think that we have this control. But the reality is we are in no different situation than what they were at that time. We are in no way more in control of our lives than they were. We just like to pretend we are. We just like to think that we are and get into this illusion of control. I think that Satan has used this illusion of control to get our focus off of worship, off of worship. And so these people before the first century, it's way earlier than that. These people were thinking, when I worship, I bow down, I pay homage, I declare allegiance, I am subject to the king, and I expend energy intensely to work for my master because he is the only one that can see the whole picture. You know, that was their idea. That was their idea when they thought of worship. Okay, nerd part number two, Greek. Okay, now I know this. I did take Greek. I took 2 years of Greek, and so I am going to say the words a little bit. Okay, but once again, I have to tell you that I am no Greek scholar. You know, if my professor, my Greek professor, I send him emails all the time. I'm just like, hey, what do you think? Am I thinking correctly on this? And he helps me out and helps me see it correctly. And of course, I rely on the guys, the scholars who really know Greek a lot of times. But I know a little bit about Greek, just enough to be dangerous. Okay, the first word in Greek for worship is this word that I want to look at. It's called sabazomai, okay? Sabazomai. Can you say that with me? Sabazomai. Okay, good job. You just said Greek. Now, this is only used one time in the entire New Testament, and it's used in Romans chapter 1, verse 25, and you're like, why are you talking about this word? It's because it's really important. I feel like it's really important to understanding. If we get kind of the context of Romans chapter 1, Paul is talking to the Romans, and he's talking about all these people who basically rejected Christ as Lord, and he's saying, just look around. Just look around at the stars. Look around at the creation. You are without excuse that there is a true God in charge of all these things. I mean, this stuff just can't happen by chance. You know, it's basically what Paul's saying. Just look around. You're without excuse. And he's talking about these people who have rejected God. And he says this in verse 25. He says, they exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and they worshiped Sabazamai, they worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator who is forever praised. Amen. Now this word Sabazamai, it means that basically you are struck with awesomeness to the point of being afraid. I mean, so here they are. They're looking at the mountains. They're looking at the sun. They're looking at the skies and the oceans and all these things, the storms and the lightning that rolls in. And they think that that stuff is so awesome that they're afraid of it, and they start to worship it. Paul is like, that's so messed up. You're getting it messed up. It's like looking at a little kitten and being afraid. And then walking up to a 600-pound Bengal tiger and slapping it in the face. I mean, that's the point that Paul's making. It just doesn't make sense because you're afraid of all these created things and you're not paying any attention to the God of the universe. You know, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense what you're doing. They're not finishing the equation. They're not looking at all this created stuff and tying that to God. They're just getting stuck on the created stuff. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that next week. And Paul's implication is that, you know, here's these people who are being struck by the awesomeness of creation. He's like, no, you should be struck by the awesomeness of God, not this stuff that he created. You know, this just reflects his power and his majesty. How can you worship that and not worship him? That's kind of Paul's idea, and that's the idea behind sabazomai, and that's why I think it's very important. But there's two other words that are translated worship. They're called, it's proskuneo, and latruo. Okay, say that with me. Proskuneo. Okay, and latruo. Okay, good job. See, I'm trying to keep you engaged here, okay? Now, in Matthew chapter 4, verse 10, we have both of these words used. Now, a little bit of, a little bit of context on Matthew chapter 4, verse 10. This is the place where Jesus, you know, he was just baptized. He goes into the wilderness, and he goes out there to be tempted by Satan. And Satan tempts him with three different things. The first thing is stones to bread. You know, you're hungry. You've been fasting for 40 days. Jesus, why don't you turn the stone into bread? And Jesus is like, no, you don't just survive on bread. You survive on the very words of God. And then he says, Why don't you jump off this temple and the angels will save you and they'll make sure that your foot doesn't even hit the ground. And Jesus is like, no, you can't test God. You don't test the Lord your God. You know, that's not the purpose of doing that. And finally, he says, why don't you just bow down and worship me, Jesus? Why don't you just bow down and worship me and I'll give you all this because this all belongs to me. Yeah, right. But sometimes we like to think that. Sometimes it looks like that, doesn't it? That the world belongs to him. But Satan says, all this belongs to me and I'll just give up and I'll give it to you if you bow down and worship me. And Jesus says in chapter 4, verse 10, away from me, Satan. I mean, actually, he doesn't say it like that. He says, away from me, Satan. I mean, he's like, just get out of here. You know, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Worship, proskuneo, serve, latruo, two words that are used interchangeably for worship. Now, proskuneo, this means basically to kiss or to bow before or to tremble before. Okay, now let me give you just a little bit of, you know, maybe understanding. I'll show you how it's used in a different place. Now in Matthew chapter 18, verse 26, this is the place where Jesus tells a story about this servant who owes all this money to his master. He owes 10,000 talents. Remember we talked a couple weeks ago how much a talent was worth, 20 years of a day laborer's wage. We kind of said if that's like, you know, minimum wage, that's like $300,000. This guy owned 10,000 talents. So something in the neighborhood of like $3 billion he owed to his master. And his master calls the servant in and he's calling him in to settle accounts. And the servant doesn't have it. And the owner says, okay, well then I'm just going to enslave you. I'm going to enslave your family. And basically this is a life sentence. Because if you're enslaved, if you're imprisoned, you can't pay money back. You know, so his family, he is going to spend his entire life in prison because of some bad choices or whatever that he made. And the servant does this, verse 26. He fell on his knees before him and he says, be patient with me. He begged. That's the word proskuneo. He begged. He knows that his master has everything in his hands. His entire life is in his hands and he has no control and he falls and he begs, he worships and he trembles before his master and he says, you have it all. Please, please be gracious with me and I will pay everything back. And we know the story, or maybe you know the story, maybe you don't. The master ends up forgiving his debt. And all because he fell before him and he worshiped, proskuneo, he begged. He knew that that master had everything and he had nothing. And the point of the parable is not where I really want to go. The point is that this word is used for just falling to your knees and begging and trembling and knowing that he has everything and you have nothing. I mean, he holds our lives in his hands. And this word latruo, it basically means to work or to serve for a reward or to render services for a particular payment. And this is a word used in Luke chapter 2, verse 37. You know, Jesus is presented in Luke chapter 2. Jesus is born, and then he's presented in the temple, and Jesus' parents meet these two people there in the temple. The first one is Simeon, who was promised that he would see the Messiah. The second one is this woman named Anna, who is a prophetess, and I love what's told us about Anna is that she never left the temple, but she worshiped or latruo night and day, fasting and praying. Okay, so this woman had dedicated her life to worshiping in the temple of the Lord, knowing that she would get to see the coming Messiah before she died. It's the same word that's used in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, when Paul encourages the Roman Christians. He says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is true worship, latruo." The idea of offering your body, everything you are, to God in worship. You see, worship impacts our work, it impacts our service, it encompasses an entire life. It impacts everything that they do. And so I just want to draw some conclusions from this little bit of a nerdy sermon, okay? I want to draw some conclusions. First of all, there is no one-to-one ratio for the word worship in the Old Testament or the New Testament. There are several words used for worship, and yet oftentimes we use one word, and we don't grasp the depth of that one word. You know, there's several different, lots of ideas encompassed. And, you know, sometimes we get focused, when we think about worship, we simply think about this assembly that gets together on Sunday morning, or maybe on a Wednesday night, or maybe on a Sunday night. And that leads me into the next conclusion, and that is that worship is a 24/7 lifestyle, not a one-hour interruption. That's what worship is. Worship is not, it's not just something we do a few hours a week. It's a 24/7 lifestyle. You know, the Old Testament captures this idea in one particular scripture, and this is what I want to end with this morning. In Exodus chapter 20, 21, you had Hebrew servants who would basically, you know, Hebrews were different in the way that they treated their servants. God wanted servants to be servants for 6 years, and then he wanted them to be let go. This was completely anti-cultural to the people around them. God didn't want any person stuck in slavery for their entire life. You could sell yourself into slavery to pay back a debt, and then in 6 years you would go free. But oftentimes, in the midst of that 6 years, sometimes that slave would be given a wife or a husband. Usually a wife, usually a man, would be given a wife, and that slave owner or that servant's owner would give him a wife, and he might have children. Now, if he went free 6 years after he was put into servanthood, if he went free, his wife and his children stayed. He didn't get to bring them with him. He had to go out and work and basically buy their freedom. That's what he had to do. And so sometimes you would have this issue where the servant would either love his master or didn't want to leave his children and his family. And so this is what Moses said to do if you came into that situation in Exodus chapter 21, verses 5 and 6. He says, "But if a servant declares, 'I love my master and my wife and children, and I do not want to go free,' then his master must take him before the judges, and he shall take him to the door or the doorpost and pierce his ear with an awl. Then he will be his servant for life." You see, this is the idea of worship. We have gone to the doorpost, and we have pierced our ears in God's presence, and we have gone before the judges, and we have said, "Our lives are yours. You are our master." That's the life of worship that we are called to. And so often we get so stuck on this service that we miss out what true worship is. And so we go around, we start judging worship is by what it is that we see and what it is that we hear, and, you know, how well the song leader does, or how well the praise team or the band or whatever it is, whatever, you know, place you're coming from. And we judge that worship based on that. And we don't even take a look at our own hearts and think about, did I spend my life in worship this week? Did I focus on God 24/7? Did I allow him to come into me and be master of my life? Did I tremble before him all week? You know, I think that the songs and the prayers and the messages would speak to our hearts more if that's the reality. If we allow him to be part of every facet of our lives. How dare we get up in front of you? How dare I get up in front of you without spending the week in worship? You know, what about our song leaders and our praise leaders and, you know, and our people that get up to lead prayers? And, you know, sometimes we're just like, "Man, this is boring." No, look at your own heart. Where have you been this week? You know, I can think of many times when I've gotten up and I have not spent the week in worship, and it's my fault. The reason that the worship is not fulfilling, it's not because there's something wrong with what's going on. You know, I've had some of the most incredible worship experiences without a praise leader, without, you know, any type of leading, actually, where it's just a circle of us just getting together and just worshiping God. You know, the point is the hearts and where we've been all week long. If it's a 24/7 lifestyle, let me tell you something, that worship is going to be fulfilling. You know, all the worship services, you know, all the preferences, it's all going to be different. But here's the reality, we're going to be fulfilled when we realize that true worship is a 24/7 lifestyle and not a 1 hour interruption. That's the truth. And so I'm going to lead a song. Charlie didn't know it, but I guess he knows it now. But I'm going to lead a song that I think speaks to this idea. And I just want to allow this song, and hopefully the message will lead you into a time of worship. Charlie's going to get up in a moment, and he's going to lead us in some worship. And I hope that we can just use these songs to commit our lives to Christ and be people who worship 24/7 and not simply a few hours a week.